This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus ceruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenated radio waves, bringing them up to a tasty and toasty 325 degrees Fahrenheit. This keeps a sin flood of statism out of your brain. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Is it working, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker? Can you feel it?
It's working. It is working, and I'm grounded. Are you grounded?
Yeah. Oh, that's a Better Call Saul reference. I'm loving that show. And your audio is grounded, son. You're grounded for bad audio. We're not using Fiend Phone today. It's a long story. Ben's coming over. Ben is driving around the country in a bus, driving, solving mysteries with his wife. And there's a place where, like, you know, just there's so much iron ore and magnetism in the earth that Fiend Phone won't work for him. So we're using his backup, which is a Cold War cutting edge of Serbo-Croatian technology, 1953 hand crank telephone that was we bought it on eBay from the Museum of Communism in Prague in the Czech Republic, former Czechoslovakia, and it actually used to be used. A similar one is still used today by the North Koreans and South Koreans to call each other in the same building where they won't look each other in the eye or cross a line in the building. They have to crank it and talk to each other. So, yeah, we're using the
cutting. It was expensive too, Michael. It cost us a pair of Levi's and a roll of toilet paper.
And a seventh generation cassette of Bon Jovi, as I remember. Smuggled across the Berlin Wall in a gash. Someone put in their leg for smuggling. Yeah, man. So, what's on your mind? What were you saying about Sparkies?
Oh yeah, we were joking around.
I was recording.
Michael was recording an ad, and he asked how it sounded, and I said, "Very Sparky. It sounds very Sparky."
Yeah, it's an ad that you'll hear in this show where, I basically call Barack Obama a liar, a socialist, and say his feet stink and he's trying to take over the internet, and then offer a modest proposal, an alternative, which is the BIPCOT open source no-gov license, which you can check out by going to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org, and read about this free open source license that we're using on Fiend Phone that we're going to be spreading and trying to get other people to use, because it's the only open source license that allows for unlimited reuse and modification of any software for free, except by governments. And that is a brave new idea. And we're going to see how far we can take it. So what is the topic today, Sparky? Oh, when you said Sparky, you made me think of MASH. I've been watching every episode of MASH ever from season one through season, I don't know. It ran longer than the Korean War. I know that. But Sparky is Radar's counterpart at another MASH unit, or at some like central, like when Radar has to put through a radio call to somewhere else, like especially outside of Korea, he has to call Sparky and say Sparky, and then he has to like bribe Sparky with cupcakes or something to get Sparky to do him a favor.
Yeah, now we're talking about the 12 steps and the 12 traditions in this series, and this is what the eighth one in the series. So today we're going to be talking about. We made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all.
I don't want to do that is usually someone's answer when confronted by their sponsor with this. And for those who haven't heard this before, we're doing, we've invented a 12-step fellowship called Statists Anonymous, which is for applying the 12 steps, 12 traditions, and 12 concepts of World Service of Alcoholics Anonymous to the disease of loving government, of thinking you need an overlord and thinking that 51% liking a bad idea gives them the right to rule over 49%. And also applying it to the ideas of being addicted to bad people and bad ideas, which often drive the love of the state or statism. So, yeah, man, read again, please. Step 8 of Statists Anonymous.
Step 8 is, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all.
Ugh, that's a tall order, man. It really is.
Hey, before we really get into that, too, we cover this every now and then on the show, but I wanted to restate something that we talk about now and then, because we are going out to new radio stations on a pretty regular basis, Yeah. And so new people are hearing us that maybe they are, you know, they just turn on the radio and they're like, what are these guys talking about? So we're not your typical, you know, news talk radio where we're talking about what the latest thing. We're not reading headlines and talking about the latest tyranny that we're facing. We're not complaining about, you know, the government's doing this or the Republicans are doing that or the Democrats are doing this. That's really not our thing. One of the taglines, Michael, I don't know if you made this up or if Nima did, but one of the early taglines that I really like is laughing while Western civilization collapses.
I think I made it up, but you know, it's all the Fiend Collective. And you know, that's a dirty word. Like collective, usually people think that means communism, but I'm trying to take that word back for capitalism and voluntarism, because you can have a collective that's voluntary where, you know, people share ideas and don't worry that much about credit. And the credit is generally applied to the whole organization because everybody comes up with two good ideas and it takes too long to write down. And we don't have, like, you know, a marshal of pens, a secretary of arms of pens sitting there writing down who said what. We don't have a royal scribe writing on the sacred scroll. So it's all just the fiends. But yeah, that sounds like me, is what I'm saying. While laughing while Western civilization collapses. And that was the tagline for a long time of the Freedom Fiends blog, which you can go to freedomfiends.com/blog and check out. It's a collaborative blog. It's a collective. It's not the collective. It's not collective speak. It's not group fail. That's a term that Davy Barker came up with. I really like that, group fail, which is what you get from forced one worldy type
central planning.
Yeah, collectivism. But you know, it kind of summed up, and I think the motto now is yakking into the void, which is, and we have pictures of like satellite transmissions pointed into space. And you know, I have this theory that it's kind of joking, but it's kind of like my idea of a great man or redemption or, you know, a savior. It's kind of making fun of, not making fun of that. It's more like being hopeful, but like, yeah, that'll never happen. Kind of like when I thought, hey, what if Ron Paul gets elected president? Wouldn't that be neat? That was Scott Horton's response when I said, do you think he'll become president? And he's like, wouldn't that be neat? And he's like, everyone knew he wouldn't. And if he did, it probably wouldn't have changed much for long. He probably would have bought a bullet like Kennedy, the last president that tried to change anything dramatic about the government. You know, when the bullet probably came from within the government, who knows? But the, you know, I have this theory, this joke, half joking, quarter joking theory that, like, well, it is a fact that radio transmissions go into space. So, you know, these satellites that point up these dishes at the satellite transmitter that points up to the satellite that beams it down to the receivers that stations pick us up from actually leaks into space. And the nearest possibly habitable planet is in the Alpha Centauri region, 4.3 light years away. And we've been on radio coming up 2 years. So I'm thinking that in, you know, a little over 2 years, the possibly intelligent life in the Alpha Centauri region might actually hear the Freedom Fiends' first few episodes on radio and say, oh my gosh, we've been listening to this planet for almost 100 years of radio transmissions. This is the first intelligent life we've ever heard. And that they'll come down here and give us their advanced technology to protect us from the state, or, you know, beam it to us through our emails or something. And all of a sudden, like, it won't matter that there's a government because we'll just have a giant, like, shield of, like, you know, 11th dimension string theory protection around us or something. Or they'll just beam us up to their planet. And, you know, I've never really said that this is kind of like a, you know, like my theory of the second coming. Like, and I'm not being, I hope I'm not sounding sacrilegious to anybody. Like, you know, I'm for all people having their own concept or no concept of a higher power. It doesn't bother me at all. And you know, as long as they're not killing each other over it or trying to pass silly laws over it, it's all good. You're a Quaker. I'm a deist. You know, we've got Catholics, Muslim friends. We've got all sorts of, you know, we don't discriminate. You know, we don't listen to what the government says of like, all these people are bad. Cause I remember them saying that about the Russians, like all Russian citizens are horrible. Like when I was growing up, you know, in the '60s. And it's not true. I have Russian friends now. And like saying that in the '60s or the '50s, like that would have gotten your door kicked in. I regularly correspond with people in Russia. That would have gotten your door kicked in the '60s. So go on, Ben. We're talking about step 8 of Status Anonymous. Read the step again, please.
Okay. Let me scroll down to it here. We made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all.
Yeah. Sounds pretty
easy.
And
one of the one of the things that we're trying to do here in our Statist Anonymous is to try to get people to think beyond, you know, maybe what you think about in your normal day-to-day life, and you realize that it's not even necessarily government that's the problem. It's not the Democrats, it's not the Republicans, it's not necessarily even government. It's the addiction to government. It's that thing in your mind that says, yeah, government is good, I need it, I can't get by without it. They'll be there, they're my savior, they're my, you know, they deliver the mail, they make the roads, they do all these things, and life couldn't go on without the government. And that's the illness that we want to address.
You know, I talked to, we had a guy on the show last night, Hugo from Mexico City, and he said that in Mexico, like, nobody trusts the police, and they've never trusted the police. And I'm not just talking about, like, you know, in America, like, people who smoke pot don't trust the police, and, you know, people that know the government is immoral don't trust the police. But in Mexico, like square tax paying, like, you know, patriotic housewives and men who have jobs and, you know, go to work every day and, like, aren't weird in any way, they will never go up to a cop and ask for directions, because they know that more often than not, it's going to end up with, like, them in handcuffs having to give a bribe to get out of it. And, you know, like, Mexico is no libertarian paradise, but what would happen? And I'm not advocating for breaking any laws. I'm just posing a mind project here. Like, what would happen if overnight, just in America or in any given country, everyone woke up and 100% of people just stopped paying taxes? Like, they couldn't arrest them all. What would happen if 100% of people just stopped asking cops for directions? What would happen if 100% of people stopped cheering when government agents, you know, beat up some hippie for mouth and back on the street, or, you know, some patriot for mouth and back, or for having the wrong kind of guns, or, you know, quit cheering paid murderers that are sent around the world, you know, after to deal with wars that are, like, gotten into on false premises over and over and over. I mean, almost all the war, you know, like the Vietnam War, Gulf of Tonkin, like, absolutely made up BS by the government, but then people are over there killing people. And that stuff happens today. Weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. We'll be back after this trip to the free market on the Freedom Fields.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week, we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
Freedom Fiends. It's Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend. Talking to Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, talking about the eighth step in Statist Anonymous. And, you know, I ranted a lot in that first segment, and I'm known for ranting. And Ben Stone is known for brilliance, for quieter, slower, just total brilliance. And I'm kind of, like, kind of feisty and sparky. So I want to step aside and let him talk a bunch, if it's possible. Yeah, everyone who knows us regularly is going, yeah, that'll happen for about 3 minutes. And then Michael will start ranting again. But here's the thing. We spent 40 minutes trying to deal with a problem that can only be audio problem that can only be described as voodoo, or, you know, like groundwater contamination with magnetic lodestone particles that were just making it so, like, the computer didn't work and we're having to use this Serbo Croatian crank radio from the Cold War. But here's the thing, like, I slept like 4 hours. We're not in the same location. Like, we're, you know, and we usually get on the show a little ahead of time, and you know, an hour ahead of time, whatever, do a sound check, chat a little bit, wake up, have breakfast together in different, you know, 2,000 miles apart. So this thing was so frustrating to me, but Ben was really cool about it. And like, yeah, what can I do to help? What can I do? What do you want me to do? You know, what do you want me to try? Like, humble. And that's the goal in Status Anonymous, is to be like confident, but not cocky. And the eighth step is about all the steps, really, but especially like the eighth and ninth step are about finding humility, which is not humiliation. It's different. Like, when you're working a program in Status Anonymous, you know, you're not the gum at the bottom of God's shoe, but you're also not God. You're like a small but important part of the whole, and individual under your own, and like, but interdependent on the rest of the world and on voluntary interactions of who you deal with, you know? So I dealt with somebody yesterday, last 2 days, like dealing with audio problems of someone over the distance, who was just like, you know, like I'd say, like, you're having a problem. His attitude was almost like, no, I'm not, man. I did everything right. Like, that's not the answer when troubleshooting, you know, especially with someone who doesn't know nearly as much about audio production as I do. Like, you know, and I'm not saying you need to like kiss my feet and say, you are the master of audio, but it's like, I've probably dealt with the problem you're dealing with, and I've probably written about it in the tutorial I asked you to read before we started doing the show together with most people. And like, for someone to be like, no, man, look, it's not me. Like, that's not the way to like cooperatively address an issue, especially when you're doing about to do live radio, which, you know, we were with this person the last 2 days and, or last week, actually earlier this week. It all just kind of runs together when you're doing seven shows a week. So humility, Ben, tell me how to find it in Status Anonymous.
That really is important. And, you know, even in like what you're talking about there is basically tech support. And anybody who's ever been on the giving end of tech support. Yeah. You know how frustrating it is. Like just calling grandma and trying to talk grandma through the steps of opening up her email. And you have to control like what does she click on? What doesn't she click on? The difference between a right click and a left click, and you're trying to go through all this stuff, and it's really, really frustrating being on the giving end of any kind of technical support, so much more so with radio and audio and all the complexities that go with it. And it's also, it's difficult to be on the receiving end of that because, you know, you want to run ahead, you want to try things, you want to have your own ideas and you want to fix it on your own. But when you're dealing with somebody who is guiding you through tech support, it's really critical to just stop and do only the things that they say and communicate clearly back and forth. Now, it's easy for me to say. That's, you know, I'm just talking into a mic. That's easy for me to say. But even for me, it's really difficult to not run out ahead, you know, assume that I know what I'm doing, click on things, whether my tech help knows it or not. And my wife did tech support for years with a major corporation, and that was one of the problems that she, one of the frustrations that she would come home and talk about was, you know, that one customer that she got on the phone that absolutely would not follow directions, that ran ahead, that did other things, that thought they knew more about it than she did. And maybe they did. Maybe they did know more about it than she did. But the fact was, they couldn't do whatever the thing was, and they had to call her for help. So at that point in time, you stop and you let the help guide you.
And there's one exception to that, and I'm going to name him by name. It's Bill Buepert, one of the co-hosts on the show. Like, when he loves to talk about the tyranny of the government, he's so good about it. And that's not really what this show is. But he's a retired Army officer, like, you know, teaches soldiers how to deal with asymmetrical warfare, knows more about the history of war and government and the world throughout history, throughout the world, than anybody I know. And I tried to get him to, like, you know, kind of do it our way, where you're kind of fun and, like, you know, just don't really talk about the government a whole lot. And we were butting heads about it. And then I realized, like, that'd be like if Jimmy Page came over to your house and you said, oh, don't play guitar, play saxophone. Wouldn't that be wacky? So Bill Buepert is the one exception where I'm just like, it's the Bill Buepert show when he's on the Freedom Fiends. And he's really good about, you know, tech support help and not interrupting. So he is, my hat's off to him, sir.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker. It was Mr. Ben Stone, Back Quaker. And for those listening on the internet who go like, why? This show's good, except they just say over and over and over who they are and what they're doing. I know, I've been listening to the whole show. This is on radio. We are on 35 radio stations, and on radio, people tune in and out. You know, people drive for a half hour and listen to the radio. And so many times I've listened to the radio and not known who an interviewee was or a show was. And like, that was good. I want to hear more of that later. And I just never can find him. So we do that. And then the next question is usually, well, why don't you edit this differently for the podcast? I'm like, because I'm working like 50 hours a week for like no money. So make a donation to the Freedom Fiends or offer to volunteer to help and, you know, edit all my shows for me for free. And then you can make the podcast only versions of them. I actually kind of like the flow of the radio ones on a podcast too. I listen to them. And, you know, part of improving what you do, and this is part of humility, and as an artist or as any kind of content producer, is listening to your stuff with a critical ear, like not criticizing, like, oh my God, I'm horrible. Like, you know, you're never going to improve if you think everything you do is bad, but like really being able to analyze what's good and what isn't. That's taking an inventory. We spoke of that earlier in the fourth and fifth step, taking inventory of what you do. Like a really good example of probably how I listen to our shows. I listen to every one of them, almost every one of them, if I have time. Later, the really good analogy is like ball players, the sports ball players watching the game tapes, you know, like trying to improve it. And I remember hearing about the singer Prince. Like he used to like videotape all his shows early on and like watch them and then make the band watch them. Like, you know, they were hired guns. He was the star, but like they had choreography and everything and complicated musical arrangements. And, you know, he made everybody watch it. And I try to encourage out of the Freedom Fiends, but I can't pay anybody because this is a, you know, pretty much almost, we give away our ad time to like Liberty things. We don't even sell ads usually. So, you know, it's a labor of love. We all have day jobs. I have a day job. Ben's retired, but, so, you know, like the thing I've seen is really good examples there. I've known a lot of musicians in my life. I played music, you know, semi-professionally and professionally, was signed to Warner Brothers, was in this band called Bomb that like toured the States, toured the world and elsewhere. And I knew a lot of people along the way who were like just blisteringly good guitar players, like people that just, you know, since they were like eight, spent 16 hours a day in their room, like practicing scales. And like, I know a lot of guitar players and other kinds of musicians who are like really, really good, but they can't play well with others. You know, either like literally they can't play music with others, or it's more like usually they want a solo, they want to be the center of attention, or they just don't mesh with other people, or like socially they don't mesh with other people because they've spent 16 hours a day playing guitar and never learned to like, you know, brush their teeth or have a conversation. So as Frank Zappa said, so a lot of working in the world, which is really the goal of Status Anonymous, is to be like, have voluntary interactions where you choose who you deal with, which is the point of the BIPCOT no gov license. Like, you know, we want to voluntarily disassociate governments from using things that we create so they can't say we built that, or at least if they use it, we can make fun of them. That's in the license. So we're all about voluntary interactions and voluntary associations, and we're trying to learn that ourselves and get better at it. We know it a bit, but we're trying to get better at it, and we're trying to help teach other people to do it, to examine what they do and learn to have better voluntary associations. Now, Ben has a police story, and it's very not about voluntary associations. It's the bad example that's the contrary to good examples that you know, I've given about like looking at your game tapes and stuff. So go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, so I wanted to give the contrast between, you know, depending on humanity, depending on yourself, depending on, you know, a proper manners and so forth in dealing with a situation rather than falling back on government to answer the thing for you. So the parallel I wanted to draw was the difference between government, like where you have faith in the government, and therefore a situation comes up and you immediately call the police to deal with it, or you call the city council, you know, or whoever in the city to rat some neighbor out because their plant is the wrong color or their, you know, leaves are getting on your driveway or whatever, rather than dealing with it on a one-to-one basis. So I've got two stories, two case stories that, and I want you to, as I read these, I want you to look beyond the cops, because there are cops in both these two stories, but look beyond that, because there's something more important than just bashing the cops. It's important to understand why the cops were there to begin with. So the first story comes from USA Today, and this was this is not a, neither of these is new stories, but the first line of the story in USA Today says,
oh, Ben, I got to ask you, did you give up voting for Lent? It is that week.
I gave up voting for life.
Okay, me too. All right, go ahead, man. But if you know, if you haven't try this, if you're listening and you're Catholic or you're religious and you celebrate Lent, try giving up the idea of worshiping the state for Lent. Make that the thing you give up. Make that the luxury or the sin that you tax yourself away from and rest yourself away from for Lent. All right, go ahead.
So from USA Today, this is the first line of the story. It says, a Madison, Alabama police officer has been arrested on assault charges for allegedly slamming an Indian citizen unprovoked to the ground face first during an arrest, leaving him partially paralyzed. That's kind of a clunky sentence, and I hate to read something like that, but essentially what happened, you've got daytime.
Well, it's old media, Madison, man. It's Alabama. Old media. They can't even form sentences anymore. Yeah. And, you know, they're still around, but they're the dinosaur drowning in the tar pit. Go ahead.
So you've got this situation. It's daytime, Madison, Alabama. It's a sort of like a middle-class to upper-middle-class neighborhood, a nice neighborhood. And the Alabama resident looks out his window and sees this Indian gentleman, a man from the country of India, who's walking down the street. And he seems to be like he's pausing at some driveways and he's looking like he's trying to figure out which house he's trying to go to. Now, the civilized thing for a normal human being should be to say, oh, there's an older gentleman who seems misplaced in this neighborhood, and he seems to not really know what he's doing. I'll walk outside and see if I can help him. That would be what a neighborly, nice human being would do. But that's not what this Alabama resident did. The Alabama resident, in a froth, calls 911 to report a person walking down the street. And he made the statement to the 911 operator. He says, the guy's just wandering around. He's like, he's very excited about this. Like, how dare he wander around on the sidewalk like that? So the cops show up. The guy speaks no English whatsoever. So from the Indian gentleman's point of view, he's walking down the street. Uniformed people come up to him suddenly and grab a hold of him and start barking orders. And this is all on camera. So this is not my imagination. He doesn't know what they want. He doesn't even know how to cooperate with them. And so their answer is essentially to one of the cops wraps his arms around the guy and body slams him face first into the ground, causing probably permanent paralysis to the gentleman. Now, this is so serious that the police chief for that police agency actually recommended termination of the cop, and the cop has been arrested. So this is not me bashing cops. But the thing I want you to understand is that, you know, the resident who called 911 because a man was walking on a sidewalk, essentially, that's what you have. If you're not sure, walk out, be confident in yourself. Every human being should be able to defend themselves. So be confident in yourself. Be prepared to help somebody or to defend yourself. And you walk up to someone and you act like a human and you say, excuse me, are you lost? Can I help you? You seem like you don't know where you're going. Can I help you? Rather than calling the dogs on them, rather than just sicking the hounds on them, try acting like a human. Try doing a nice thing. And the second case where a very similar thing happened was with John Crawford in the Walmart in Beaver Creek, Ohio, where John Crawford went in to buy some graham crackers and marshmallows and chocolate. He saw s'mores. a pellet gun. Yeah, he's going to make some s'mores with his family that evening. He sees a pellet gun on the shelf and thinks, oh, hey, look at that. So he grabs the pellet gun. He's walking along. The pellet gun is, the barrel is aimed at the floor. A Marine sees him, panics, calls 911 in a froth. Rather than walking up and saying something like, hey, you know, whatever, rather than interacting with
The guy's a Marine. Like, if he determined beyond a doubt that this person was a threat and was an active shooter, he could have disarmed him. He's a Marine, man.
Yeah. But instead, he calls 911. The cops show up in a panic because the cops, you know, you're calling the dogs. You're sicking the hounds on somebody. And
Man with a gun. That's what was called in.
Exactly. Yeah. So they come running in, start barking orders. The guy doesn't immediately respond in the way they expect, so they shoot him dead. And you know, you got to think back beyond just police brutality. And
there was,
you have to
realize. There's another one recently in Texas. A pregnant woman was beaten by a cop to the point of miscarrying her child. Like, the cop killed her child because she sassed him and he said, I didn't like her tone. And, you know, maybe one out of these three cops will go to jail for a little while, or, you know, most of them will get paid vacation for 2 or 3 weeks. And then there'll be an investigation by the police, which is the rats going to guard the cheese, you know, as the band MDC said in a song. These people are not culpable generally, man. They, and occasionally they will put someone in prison, like the judge that was, you know, giving every juvenile, you know, basically selling them, like getting kickbacks, literal money kickbacks from a private prison to give them extreme sentences. That guy went to jail, but it's like once in a while something is so egregious that they have to throw somebody under the bus. And one thing I will say is that filming the cops and not like giving them a pass and saying, oh, it's the cops were probably right. Like, actually, like, making this a national and international public situation is good when the cops are actually in the wrong like this, because it makes it so the police departments really almost have to do something. They can't just let the guy get away with it. So that's part of not loving the state, of not just co-signing everything men with shiny badges and magical politicians who win basically popularity contests for sociopaths, which is what someone said every election is. You know, don't give those people a pass, man. Hold them accountable like you'd hold a citizen accountable, or even more so, because you're paying their salary at gunpoint. Because if you don't pay it, if you don't pay your taxes, they'll come to your house. They'll send you letters. Then if you ignore them, they'll send men with more letters, and then men with guns and letters. And then if you resist, they will put a gun to your head and shoot you or drag you off to a cage and kidnap you for something you never agreed that you're just born into, man. And that's a slave contract, yeah, when you're just born into it and don't have a choice.
And that's really what we want to open people's eyes to, is this difference between believing that all of that stuff is legitimate and necessary and just having a free mind of it, and being free of the addiction of believing that government is the answer. No matter what the question, they think government is the answer.
And you can be non-government without being anti-government. We're not anti-government. We're just like, we want other options, man, and we want to build different roads around this slow, lumbering beast that's drowning in the thrashing as it drowns in the tar pits of history.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations, and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Freedom Fiends, this is Michael Dean and Ben Stone on the back. We're talking about the eighth step of Status Anonymous, which is a 12-step fellowship we are forming live on the air every week. And what is the eighth step again, Ben? And then give me some redemption about it.
We made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. See, now this is, it seems obvious, but before you can make amends for harm that you've done, you have to become willing to make amends. And I, again, that seems obvious, but there's a big difference between going, you know, you bump into somebody and you're like, oh, sorry about that, and you go on. There's a real difference between really coming to a point of saying, yeah, I really did do this, and now I have to face the difficult part and make amends for it. I have to physically do something about it. I have to write them a letter. I have to go talk to them. I have to give them a call. That's, you know, the thought of it is a thing that would be very difficult to just agree to in your mind that, yes, I am going to do that. And then the next step we get into the next time will be in step 9, where you actually do that. Now, I wanted to read a section from the book, 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. And this is from the chapter on step 8. And I want to read just the opening paragraph here, because it's really good. It says, steps 8 and 9 are concerned with personal relations. First, we take a look backward and try to discover where we have been at fault. Next, we make a vigorous attempt to repair the damage we have done. And third, thus having cleared away the debris of the past, we consider how, with our newfound knowledge of ourselves, we may develop the best possible relations with every human being we know. This is a very large order. It is a task which we may perform with increasing skill, but never really finish. Learning how to live in the greatest peace, partnership, and brotherhood with all men and women of whatever description is a moving and fascinating adventure. Every AA has found that he can make little headway in this new adventure of living until he first backtracks and really makes an accurate and unsparing survey of the human wreckage he has left in his wake. And that's kind of, you know, what I was talking about earlier with those negative stories about, you know, police brutality and so forth. Really, I mean, but when we call the police on people, or when we call the city and say, hey, that guy's tree is leaning over my garage or whatever, when we do these things, rather than dealing with people on a one-to-one basis and being polite and just being a human, when we do these things that cause us to be dependent upon government to act for us, we're leaving destruction in our wake. Because you have to keep in mind that everything that the government does, it does with stolen money. And everything the government does, it does through the threat of force or violence. And so when humans interact, we don't need that. We can interact with one another on a one-to-one basis without threats and theft and all these things. And if you think about it, in your own life, you probably go through a lot of encounters with a lot of people over a long period of time without ever having an actual encounter where violence or theft comes into account. I know in my life, I have a tendency not to back down from physical confrontations, and it's kind of a character flaw that I have, in the sense that I at times have almost enjoyed physical confrontations and even looked for them. And you know, my loving wife has helped me to get better from that. But over the course of a very violent life that I've had, in 50 whatever years old that I am, there has still only been a small handful of actual confrontations. Almost all interactions with other human beings, even for me who tends to be a violent person, almost all interactions with other people are peaceful. And they're based on things like, you know, politeness and commonness and conversations that are not arguments. This is so important for having a peaceful, happy, and healthy life. It's really critical.
Yeah, man. All right. We're going to go to the top of the hour here, where some national and local news will scare the heck out of you. And then we're going to come back and help you put the world into perspective a little bit more and become a little more peaceful, regardless of what's going on outside your window on the Freedom Fiends. Worms.
Worms.
Go Freedom Fiends! Freedom Fiends! Helping the helpless! Freedom Fiends! Saving the universe! Freedom Fiends! Doing the things that I've done! Saving the world from the state! Fighting the forces of hate! Freedom Fiends! Helping the helpless! Freedom Fiends! Kicking the hornet's nest! Freedom Fiends! Doing the things that I've done! Keeping the tasers away! You should be free, not a slave! Helping the helpless!
broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. I am, as I said, Mr. Michael Dean. I'm talking to Mr. Ben Stone, the bad Quaker. He's not using Fiend Phone today. We had a ground magnetism problem with the computer he runs that on, so he's using a, I think he's using an iPhone with like a something from the Cold War, Serbo-Croatian Soviet technology hand crank telephone hooked up to it. How are you, Mr. Ben Stone, Bad Quaker? Are you safe? Are you there? Have you been contacted by the government?
I am safe. I am here, and I have not been contacted by the government. I try to stay away from them as much as possible.
Yeah, they're so square, man. So we're talking about the eighth step of Status Anonymous, and something I've heard about the steps is that step 1 through 7 are about getting right with God and yourself. Step 8 through 10 are about getting right with your fellow man. And that's where we are today. Step 11 is back to getting right with God and self. And step 12 is about getting right with society and the world. So if that breaks it up a little bit, makes it clearer. That's my delineation of it. That may not be other people's, but that's the one that makes sense to me. So what is step 8 in Status Anonymous? And what
step
is it?
Step eight is, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, I have a personal story on this, if you think this is a good time for it.
Yeah, man. Go for it.
Actually, let me read this line from the book, The 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, and then I'll tell my little story. This reopening of emotional wounds, some old, some perhaps forgotten, and some still painfully festering, will at first look like a purposeless and pointless piece of surgery. You know, when, let's go all the way back into the 1970s.
All the way back.
When I was all the way back with the hits. I was a drug using, pain in the neck kid. And I didn't quit drugs using a 12-step program that was orchestrated like this. But as I look back at the things that I went through to stop using drugs without knowing the 12 steps, largely I went through these 12 steps. I just didn't have anybody to guide me with it. And it would have been a lot easier had somebody been there to explain these things and work with me on them. But one of the things that I did go through was a couple years after I had stopped drugs, I had been in pretty much continual phone contact with my mother. You know, as a young guy, late teens, early 20s, I talked to my mother.
Late-term adolescence.
Yeah. And I had been very honest with her about all the pain that I had brought to the family during my drug years. And, you know, I was more than open to acknowledge my faults and apologize to her for pain that I had caused her and thanking her for the help that she'd given me in stopping. But there came a point in time when she said, you know, Ben, you never really talked to your dad about this. And I said, I think I have. And she said, no, you never have actually talked to him about this. And she said, you really ought to do that. And I was living in Ridgecrest, California, which is actually in our broadcast area for one of our radio stations out of Barstow.
Woo.
I was living in Ridgecrest, and my parents were living down in California City, which is about 35, 40 miles away, something like that. And I, hearing that from her, I thought, you know, it took a couple days before it sunk in, but I thought, you know, she's right. I have to talk to Dad. And I have to do it one-on-one, and I have to do it where he's comfortable. So I made a special trip all the way to California City, and I went out to the airport. He liked to hang out. My dad's an old-time pilot from years and years back, self-taught pilot. And that, the more you think about that, the crazier it sounds. He literally taught himself how to fly and refused to ever get a license. But anyway, not the point of the story.
Wow.
So I went to the airport knowing that's where my dad would be hanging around, and I went out and I found him, and we stood next to his airplane, and I told him, I said, Dad, I have got to talk to you about how much I hurt you and the damage that I did to our family. And there was actual financial damage too, because largely as a result of my drug activities, he had his house burned down. I crossed some very influential people from Northern California who are of Sicilian birth and own a series of wineries and vineyards. And I crossed them in a very negative fashion. And their response when they couldn't find me to pay me back for my my actions, their response was to burn my dad's farm or my dad's ranch house down.
Wow.
So, and that's a really interesting story that someday I might tell on the radio, but that's way too big for today. So I went to Dad and I said, Dad, you know, it's not just the loss of the farm, of the ranch house. It's not just the financial damage that was done. You know, I understand what I put you through when I was a teenager, and I understand how bad it hurt to see your son go through that stuff. And it was so important. It's really hard for me to even find words to explain how important that was for him to hear that. But as important as it was for him to hear it, what I found out later, it was more important that I said it. It was more important for me to have said it to him. I got more healing from that than he did. It was great for him to, you know, to have his son acknowledge this to him, but it was so much more important for me. And I want to jump back to the book for a minute here and just read a section of it. It says, "The moment we ponder a twisted or broken relationship with another person, our emotions go on the defensive. To escape looking at the wrongs we have done another, we resentfully focus on the wrong he has done to us. This is especially true if he has, in fact, behaved badly at us. Triumphantly, we seize upon his misbehavior as the perfect excuse for minimizing or forgetting our own." And so much of the time, that's what we end up doing. We end up using the other person's behavior as an excuse for never really confronting in our own mind what it is that we did and how we behaved and what our, in the case of with alcoholism or drug addiction or whatever, how you allowed your addiction to give you the excuse to behave the way that you did. And to be able to very honestly face yourself, face your history, and then go back and go eye to eye with someone that you did wrong and then ask their forgiveness. It's a tremendous thing. It's extremely helpful in your own walk.
Yeah.
Was that too outpouring, you think, for the radio?
No, man. I think the talk radio is all about compulsive disclosure with a little bit of reservation. And I think that is exactly what that was. Compulsive disclosure with a little bit of reservation. I'm kidding about the compulsive disclosure. I think that a lot of meetings that I've been to, 12-step meetings, there's different kinds of shares. And there's the share where, like, somebody gives their experience, strength, and hope, and it's really redemptive and really helps them. And then there's the kind of share that I call the vomit share, where it's usually people that don't go to meetings very often, but they've been sober a long time, or especially like people who are recently sober and don't understand how it works, who kind of consider the room like their therapist only, and like don't even listen for feedback and just kind of dump. Like they come in the room, you can tell like they're sitting there kind of nervous, like jittery in their chair. And when they get their chance to share, they just spew. And it's all about what bad has happened to them this week and who they resent. And they just spew. And then they feel better, but everyone else kind of feels worse because they've just kind of vomited all over the whole room. And that's not really recovery. It's a good start. It's probably better than not speaking and not sharing at meetings or, you know, one-on-one with a sponsor or someone you trust in Status Anonymous. But it really isn't recovery. And recovery involves like identifying the problem, admitting the problem, being willing to change, asking for help, making lists of what you've done wrong, making amends to people, except when to do so would injure them or others. And we're going to get deep into that in the ninth step part on the next episode of this series. And then continuing to help other people, which is the 12th step, which is very important, not only to staying sober and to helping others, but to helping yourself. And, you know, the thing that you said about that it helped you more than it helped your dad, that's something to really look at when people are reluctant to do any kind of fearless, searching moral inventory and make amends to people. Because, you know, a lot of times, and this is kind of jumping ahead to step nine, but a lot of times I'll do it because it kind of like sets up, you know, why we're doing step eight. A lot of times people are reluctant to make amends. And then when they do them, the person making the amends feels a lot better. And you can't be dependent on what someone's results are when you make amends. One of my amends was an adult woman I dated as an adult who was still living with her mother when she got sober. She got sober before I did. She went back to live with her mother for a while to get her stuff together. And I had turned her on to drugs, and she'd ended up with a really bad, hard drug problem. And that's not my fault. You know, people have free will, but you know, I introduced her to it, and I had some stake in, you know, I had some responsibility in it. And I, when I got to my amends, I called her up to apologize to her for, you know, introducing her to hard drugs. And her mother answered the phone and said, "I know who you are. I don't want you calling here. If you ever call here again, I'm calling the police." And, you know, I didn't push it. I didn't say, "Well, this woman's on my list. Her daughter's on my list. I have to make amends." I just set it aside. And like a year and a half later, I ran into her at a show. She came to see my band, and I like, you know, took her aside and like sincerely apologized to her, and she accepted it. But it's like, you promptly make amends. You don't immediately make amends. You don't have to make them immediately, but you also don't put them off. And you also don't do them when to injure them would injure them or other people. And, you know, continuing to like try to get a hold of that girl immediately would have harmed the mother and probably the woman and probably me, you know, because she was going to call the cops on me. So you have to be smart with this stuff and not feel like you have to barrel through it. You do it promptly, which is not immediately, and it's not putting it off. We'll be back after we put off the show for some ads.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
Freedom. Freedom Fiends. Freedom Fiends. Drop some mad science, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker.
Yeah, so right before the break, we were talking about how this step eight, is not about healing the other person. We're not making
although it is
to them to heal them.
No, you are.
Well, it is healing to them. It is healing.
It's not selfish. It's not like, I have to do this only for me. It's like, that's the motivation to do it. And I think you're saying that, but I want to be clear about that. Like, you know, this isn't just about you. This is about your stake in society.
Yeah. And as a bonus for that, we do get healing to us when we do that. Because, you know, there's an old saying that in order to be forgiven, you must first forgive. And before you can acknowledge that you've harmed somebody, you first have to forgive their, you know, because it's always a give or take thing. They did something to me, I did something back, or I did something first, or whatever however it fell through. It's a two-way thing. You have to forgive them and seek their forgiveness. And that's a healing. It's a two-directional healing thing. So I wanted to read this little section from the book, 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. It says, "Some of us, though, tripped over a very different snag. We clung to the claim that when we were drinking, we never hurt anybody but ourselves." And this is something, you know, I've heard this a lot of times. in one form or another from specifically in regards to alcohol that, well, when I was drinking, I only hurt myself. And well, not really. I mean, it seems that way, but that can be an excuse to get away from having to deal with what you did to other
people. Yeah, man, alcoholics leave a swath of burning, scorched earth wherever they go and often don't really notice it or blame it on, or they blame it on others.
And if we take this to our Status Anonymous thing, all you have to do is substitute the word drinking with whatever its status equivalent is. So, yeah. for instance, we say, instead of saying that we clung to the claim that when we were drinking, we never hurt anybody but ourselves. If you just substitute that and you say, we clung to the claim that when we were voting, we never hurt anybody but ourselves. Or we clung to the claim that when we called the police, we never hurt anybody but ourselves. Or when we, you know, lobbied Congress, or when we wrote our congressman or whatever, we never hurt anybody but ourselves. But it's not true because, you know, first off, the dependency on government is what we're talking about. The dependency, the idea that government can supply the answer. Government can supply me redemption. Government can cover my actions. Government can make it okay. All these things are the problem. The problem is trusting in government and not trusting in, you know, a real honest relationship between people. And I've said before, I think I even said it in early on in the first hour, that alcohol, you know, kind of numbs the brain and gives us the ability not to have to deal with the truth of our lives. And that's exactly what government does. Government numbs our senses and allows us to let somebody else deal with it. Let the police deal with it. Let the city council deal with it. Let, you know, the congressman deal with it. Let them, rather than keeping it on a one-to-one individual basis and being a human and talking to our neighbors and talking to our friends and working out our problems, you know, rather than just immediately thinking that the thing to do is to use law or use the government to get somebody or to get, you know, what I want from them.
Yeah.
Now I want to read again from the book. It says, though in some cases we cannot make restitution at all, and in some cases action ought to be deferred, we should nevertheless make an accurate and really exhaustive survey of our past life as it has affected other people. In many instances, we shall find that though the harm done others has not been great, the emotional harm we have done to ourselves has. And so going back to the story with my dad, I did some pretty big harm to him financially, and I did some harm to him emotionally. But using the drugs as an excuse for my behavior really did more harm to me than him. He could handle the financial burden of the loss of his ranch. He could handle what he went through of his son disappointing him by being, you know, a heavy drug user and involved in all kinds of crime and everything that I was involved in. He could handle that and get through it. And it was really nice for him to be able to, you know, for me to come to him and deal with him and make amends with him. That was good for him, but it was so much more helpful to me because it let me put all that burden off of my shoulders and not be carrying it around anymore. And we're going to go out for another break for the market, but we'll be right back.
Yeah.
So stick with us.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. The central scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Ah!
Fiends. It's Michael Dean talking to Ben Stone, Beck Quaker, about step 8 in Status Anonymous. What you got, Ben? Drop some mad scientists all over us in a big pile.
So again, step 8 is the step that we look at ourselves very honestly, and we make a list and we say, okay, this is who we're going to contact. This is how we're going to make amends. And this is, you know, I have a plan on how to do this. And step 9, when we get into it in the next episode, we'll talk about actually doing that, making amends. But we're talking about defective relations. That's kind of what step 8 is about. And I want to read a section from the book again. And it says, since defective relations with other human beings have nearly always been the immediate cause of our woes, including our alcoholism, no field of investigation could yield more satisfying and valuable rewards than this one. Now, I want to make a substitute in this, so I'll read it with my substitution. Defective relations with other human beings have nearly always been the immediate cause of our woes. And that's the main reason that people want government. People want a government so that government can interact with other people on their behalf. And so they don't have to. I don't have to worry about the guy who speeds too fast through my neighborhood. I'll just call the cops on him. I don't have to deal with the old lady down the street whose bushes grow over into my yard or whatever. I can just call the city. I don't have to deal with people. There's this numbing, this drug that's there that's for me that I can use, that I can rely on rather than rely on a good relationship with another human being. And that's government. Government becomes that drug. Another section I wanted to read, it says, calm, thoughtful reflection upon personal relations can deepen our insight. We can go far beyond those things which were superficially wrong with us to see those flaws which were basic, flaws which sometimes were responsible for the whole pattern of our lives. Thoroughness, we have found, will pay and pay handsomely. Now, one of the things that we want to do in this, and the book kind of goes into this, is to define what is harm. So when I was talking about the story with my dad, it was really easy to define what the harm was. There was financial harm that I had done to him with the loss of his building, of his structure, of his ranch house. There was the physical harm done. There was the emotional harm of his son being a heavy drug user and criminal. And there was the emotional baggage of him knowing, or him feeling like, that he had failed as a parent. And all those emotions that a parent has when their child is doing something, even an adult child is doing something that is either shameful to the family, or they know is harmful, or they know is dangerous. And all those things fit in my case. And so we were able to define the word harm with my dad very easily. But sometimes it's a little harder to define that word. So to define the word harm in a practical way, we might say, I'm stealing from the book here, we might say, or we might call it, the result of instincts in collision, which cause physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual damage to people. And so that even breaks it down further and allows to see beyond the obvious stuff. So if there's been a conflict that, or a collision, as it says in this case, which causes physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual damage to people, then we've discovered the harm. And so as you examine your life and you think backwards and you go through relationships and you go through conflicts you've had with people and you're really brutally honest with yourself and you say, yeah, I know that guy was a jerk, but was I partially at fault? What was my part in this? You know, the old saying, it takes two to tango, and that goes with positive relationships, or it goes with negative relationships. So if you've been in a conflict, the odds are it wasn't all anyone's fault. It was partially your fault. It was partially their fault. And so you can begin to really be honest with yourself and decide, what was my part in this conflict? So going back to the book, having carefully surveyed the whole area of human relations and having decided exactly what personal traits in us injured and disturbed others, we can now commence to ransack memory for the people to whom we have given offense, to put a finger on the nearby and the most deeply damaged ones shouldn't be all that hard to do. Then, as the years go, as year by year, we walk back through our lives as far as memory will reach, we shall be bound to construct a long list of people who have, to some extent or other, been affected. We should, of course, ponder and weigh each instance carefully. We shall want to hold ourselves to the course of admitting the things we have done, meanwhile forgiving the wrongs done us, real or fancied. And I wanted to touch on that too, because oftentimes we can imagine harm is done to us when there has been no harm. If we're in a conflict with someone, it's not that hard to imagine evil intent upon them and imagine they're out to get us, or imagine that they're behaving more badly than they really are, and for us to take offense at that and then respond to that negatively. And so this is a lesson not only going backwards and looking at how you've handled conflicts in the past, but it's also a way to look forward and thinking about how will I handle the next conflict that comes up. When the next person, you know, sends me that abrupt email, or when the next person says that, you know, the coarse thing to me, or whatever the case might be, how am I going to respond to it then? Am I going to look for an opportunity to be offended so that I can respond? Or will I not look for an opportunity to be offended and look more for an opportunity where I can be enriched and where I can enrich the other person?
Worms.
Yeah. I hate to admit, you're not supposed to admit things like this on the radio, but I kind of lost track of time there for a second. I had to pause and see what time it was, because a lot of people don't, if you're listening to this on the internet through a podcast or whatever, as we've talked about before, you might not realize, but we're on a time clock that is ticking. Whether we keep up with it or not, that music's going to come back in and they're going to go to a commercial
break. You got 4 minutes, so brother.
Yeah, that's one of the aspects of being on the radio, is that you have to have a constant eye on the clock and not allow it to get away from you. Otherwise, it'll kind of eat you alive.
Tell people about your concussions, for people who don't know. If anyone's like, man, that's not good radio what that guy just did. It's amazing that Ben can walk and talk, let alone do it so well. Tell us about your concussions.
Yeah, this is really not on the topic, but it is true. I've had in excess of 35 concussions from a variety of different reasons.
It is related, because we talked in the first hour about how you don't do violence anymore, even though you feel like doing it sometime. And that's definitely, I would say, recovery in Status Anonymous and in life. And, you know, not all. How many concussions have you had, roughly?
Excess of. An honest number is probably about 45 or 50.
And how many of them have been from violence?
Very few. Almost all of them are nonviolent confrontation or nonviolent accidents.
You've also been shot.
But I have been. I've been shot a couple times. I've been shot at and shot and actually hit twice. But there was a lot of violence in my life. And I came to a point of where I had to honestly come to grasp with the fact that one punch to the head could possibly kill me. Just one, not even a crazy, you know, professional boxing type punch, just any good, well-landed punch to the head, because there's been so much brain damage in the actual tissue of my brain, one good punch could cause the kind of bleeding that couldn't be controlled even if I was at a hospital when it took place. So physically, I have an absolute reason to not allow conflicts to escalate to that point now. But then in addition to that, you know, it's also important, I came to understand, it's also important not to get in those confrontations like that, not to let myself get into a position where I'm going to have to punch somebody or knock them down or do anything else. And that's not to mean that I'm a pacifist. You know, Michael and I both agree on this. A person should be not only armed, but they should be calm in themselves and comfortable in themselves to know that they can defend themselves if need be. But the responsibility that comes with that is knowing that you have to be enough in control that you're not going to unnecessarily, you know, bring out a weapon that shouldn't be out or escalate a situation beyond what it needs to be by doing something stupid like drawing a weapon or whatever.
Yeah.
And that was something Going back to the concussion thing, you know, having that many concussions has a lot of repercussions, has a lot of symptoms. Symptoms like sometimes I have shaking, sometimes I have a like a rhythmic shaking that's very much like Parkinson's disease, and also I have some forgetfulness. So that just like what Michael reminded a second ago, I don't necessarily remember what we talked about in the first hour or even 5 minutes ago. I'll remember it if I think back on it a few hours from now, but my immediate short-term memory is severely damaged from that. And so I have to work around those things. But again, going back to the violence thing, that's one of the reasons why I had to very seriously come to the conclusion that I could not allow myself the luxury of having an angry temper. And Michael, you said something to me, oh, this has been like 2 years ago or something, in reference to alcoholism, that the alcoholic cannot afford the luxury of holding grudges and being angry about stuff. Do you remember telling me that?
Yeah, that's in the AA book. And, you know, I was talking to Diana Kyler about that too, and she said that she thought that was kind of hyperbole, and that really nobody can afford the luxury of holding grudges and stewing in anger. And it's true, but I would say that people who tend to be alcoholics and addicts have, like, the switch tends to switch quicker on less provocation and go longer, you know? Like I've never been in violent situations, but, you know, back in the day when I was drinking, even if I wasn't drunk, I remember, like, being cut off in traffic, and most people will yell out the window some expletive and then, like, you know, stew about it for a couple minutes and then forget it. You know, I would like get to work, and like that night I'd be lying in bed like, I hope his wife leaves him and his children hate him, and I hope his life is ruined. Like, not plotting anything, but just like wishing him harm for like hours and days. And I don't get like that anymore, because I've worked these steps, or I don't get that way as long. That's a good thing, man. Because that stuff
will healing.
That stuff will destroy you from the inside. It's a toxin.
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Money. This is Mr. Michael Dean talking to Mr. Ben Stone, the bad Quaker. And this is Redemption in the third act, the end of the show, sending you home a little happier than when you started. And most talk radio shows send you home scared and like more nervous and upset and overstimulated limbic system than when you started. And that's addictive, that kind of like adrenaline fix. But it destroys you. It's kind of like, and it builds resentments. It's just like stewing in your resentments at Barack Obama and, you know, all of the three-letter government agencies and all the tyrants. And it doesn't really change anything. It doesn't spur you to any action. It just makes you talk louder and more angry and lose sleep. And we don't like to do that. We like to send you home in a calmer place. And that does not mean that we hide our head in the sand like an ostrich. We don't do that. We know better than the average talk radio listener about the tyranny of the day, because they know about what Obama did, but they still generally love the police and love the military. And they don't know that police constantly, you know, beat up pregnant women and cause them to abort their baby out of them for looking at them the wrong way and sassing them when they're giving them a parking ticket or something. And we know the police kick in the wrong door all the time. And we know that there's not going to be a second American Revolution. You know, we like guns, but everybody's sitting there stroking their gun, talking about when this line in the sand gets crossed. No, man, it's all talk, and I'm not trying to spur anyone to action because I don't want to live in a civil war. I don't want to live in an American Revolution II. I think this could be done without a shot and without any blood. And it's all about finding different roads instead of trying to fix the old broken roads. And a lot of that is getting at peace with yourself and getting at peace with your fellow man. And that's what these steps are about. And, you know, there's that thing, the serenity prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And that's really important in recovery, you know, in AA, NA, and in Status Anonymous. We've only mentioned it twice now, I think, in this whole segment, this whole series. But it's worth mentioning. And what was that thing on Seinfeld? Serenity now. Yeah, which is not the same thing. But it was like, it was basically like screaming for serenity rather than being willing to find help for serenity. Talk about that a little.
Yeah, I think that was a little dog whistle to people who knew that prayer and understood what it really was.
Well, almost every screenwriter on TV and movies in Hollywood is in AA. So there's all sorts of dog whistles.
Yeah. And in that, if a person doesn't, if they're not familiar with what we're talking about, one of the characters' father, who is a very emotional type in this show anyway, was trying to obtain serenity in his very upset life that he lives by clenching his fist and saying, "Serenity now!" And sometimes he would just scream it. And one of the other characters warned, that, hey, that actually will kind of drive you crazy. It's not the answer. It won't help you.
Yeah.
And then there's the example of one of the characters that it does kind of do that to. But like, Michael, like you've pointed out, the difference here is in demanding serenity or in seeking and asking for serenity and asking the understanding of what you can do something about, what you can't do something about. That's really the key in that.
Yeah.
I think it'd be good to read the step we're on again.
All right.
Also.
Yeah, 1 minute.
We made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And let me also read this last section of the book here from this chapter. It says, we should avoid extreme judgments, both of ourselves and others involved. We must not exaggerate exaggerate our defects or theirs. A quiet, objective view will be our steadfast aim. Whenever our pencil falters, we can fortify and cheer ourselves by remembering what AA experience in this step has meant to others. It is the beginning of the end of isolation from our fellows and from God.
Yeah, and you can substitute Status Anonymous for AA in there if you want.
Yeah.
And remember that clinging to resentments will destroy you. It'll burn you from the inside into a ineffective human being. And we want to be effective human beings with ourselves, with the universe, and with our fellow man. And that's what Working These Steps is all about in Status Anonymous. So thanks, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker.
Thank you, Michael.
Worms, man. It's been a good show.
Worms.
I appreciate it, brother, man. Thank you. Yeah.
I like this little drum part.
I built this. Worms, worms, worms.